Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our final edition of Vikings Purple Past. Mark Rosen, your host here tonight, and I can't think of anyone to kind of summarize this run for Viking Purple Past than our special guest tonight, Fred Zamberletti, the longtime trainer of the Minnesota Vikings from 1961 to 98, and of course now the consultant slash historian for the Vikings organization. Fred, I really appreciate you spending some time with us tonight. We have so much to cover, but first of all, let's start with the streak. We always talk about Cal Ripken's streak. My goodness, 1,049 straight Viking games, and it came to an end this weekend in Washington, D.C., your first Viking game that you missed. That must have been an odd feeling for you.
Wasn't comfortable.
Yeah, it wasn't, I'm sure. I know everyone's sort of, you know, concerned a little bit about your health. Are you doing okay?
I'm doing great. I'll be okay.
Well, that's good to hear, Fred. That's great to hear. Your long run started in 1961, and get a little background on coming here from you were at the University of Iowa, right, from 51 to 57, then you went to Toledo. How did you get hired by the Vikings?
Well, the Vikings, you know, they got the franchise, and I've always wanted to be into pro football, and I started writing letters, and every time I would write a letter, I'd get a response back saying, well, we haven't hired a general manager yet, and we haven't hired a head coach yet, and there's all these things coming on. We'll put your letter on file, and it never, you know, when those letters on file, sometimes they get lost. And I knew a lot of people that knew Van Brocklin,
mm-hmm.
That played with him with the Eagles, that I knew from Iowa, and people I'd been in the Army with, and I think that helped a great deal.
Well, you know, I've talked to so many of his former players on this program over the course of the last couple of years, and everyone pretty much has one general theme when it comes to Norm Van Brocklin, of course, the Minnesota Vikings' first head coach, just kind of a hard-boiled guy, not necessarily the easiest personality to get along with. What were your first impressions, and how did they progress during your time with the Dutchman?
Well, he was like a Marine drill sergeant with tight boots. I'll tell you, he was very bright and very generous.
Mm-hmm.
But he could be darn right ornery. He was a tough man to work for.
Yeah.
But if you knew if you could work for him, you could work for anybody.
Well, he was such a fantastic player. People forget about that. And sometimes, as an outstanding quarterback and winning an NFL championship and then becoming a head coach, that can be a tough transition because maybe you expect your players to be as good as you were. And of course, as an expansion team, it was kind of a ragamuffin bunch that you kind of got together up there in Bemidji for the first couple training camps.
Well, I think saying ragamuffin might be overestimating.
It's like basically like the Bad News Bears a little bit of football.
But I'll tell you what, he turned over a bunch of tough, tough guys for Bud. Those guys, if you take the Kasalkis, the Aldermans, the Sundys, the Dingelhoffs, all these people, they were tough. And they soon learned that it's better to give it all out and try to win than face him on Monday morning.
Yeah. Well, he had that attitude, and he was also very innovative. I mean, I don't think people realize you watch today's offenses in the NFL, whether you're watching, you know, Drew Brees from last night or Aaron Rodgers, and you think to what Van Brocklin knew between the ears was pretty remarkable for that era, which really wasn't a pass-happy time in the NFL.
Oh, he was bright. Norm was the kind of guy that if you were going to have one game and you needed somebody to draw up a game plan, he was your man, but you want to keep him away from the team because he could self-destruct. But if you just let him do the game plan like this, everything would be fine. We spent some real trying moments. If we lost the game, we knew we were going to have a full scrimmage the next day.
Mm.
And especially if he hated the Rams, you know, that's where a lot of his career was with the Rams, and he hated them. And to lose to the Rams, oh, it was going to be brutal.
Yeah.
You know, but he, I tell you, when Christmas come along, He was very generous. His wife was generous. I'll tell you a little story that's getting off. But we were all scared of him. Ozzy would come over, and we start talking about Van Brocken stories, and Ozzy would say, my armpits are sweating right now just thinking about it. He's been dead for a number of years, but he said it was tough. And so one Christmas, he said, I want you to bring your family over for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
I went home and told my wife, I said, he's ruined 364 days a year for me. He's not going to ruin Christmas Day. You call him up and tell him we can't make it.
Oh, that's a great line. What a great story, and very typical for Norm Van Brocken. We're speaking with Fred Zambrilletti, the longtime trainer, now historian for the team from 1961 to 98, and has been involved, of course, with every time, every game, every moment with the Vikings since 1961. So much fun to talk to you, Fred. And we're talking about Van Brocken's relationship with Fran Tarkenton was legendary as well, because Francis, as we all know, ended up being one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and yet he butted heads with the Dutchman as well and led to his departure here.
Oh, yeah. They went around and around, and finally Francis wrote the letter to the owners that he could no longer play in Minnesota, and so they decided that Jim Finks, they were going to trade Francis, and more or less, Norm had to resign.
Yeah, that was it. And in having this discussion with Bud Grant a little while ago, Bud told me originally Bud was offered the job to be the first head coach of the Vikings. He was up in Winnipeg with the Canadian Football League, and he said, you know, I don't want to be the first guy. I want to be the second guy.
Yeah.
And he had a chance to be the second guy and took over from Norm Van Brocken in, what, 1967?
Yes.
Yeah, and so here you are working for a guy like, as you just mentioned, who was tough enough to deal with for 364 days out of the year. Now you have a Bud. Did you know anything about Bud when he took over here as the head coach?
Strange thing. I was from Iowa, and the Minnesota came down and played Drake in the Corn Bowl Classic in Des Moines. And for some reason, Bud was not a starter on that basketball team, but he really impressed me. There's just something about him. He'd drive for that basket, look out. And I remembered him. In a little bit, with Bud coming down here, I thought, no, we're going to have all the Gophers hanging around, these old buddies from the teams he played with. And that's going to be – there was none of that. Bud, that was – didn't have to worry about that. Bud cut all that off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Bud's the kind of guy that probably had more street sense than anybody I've ever known. I forget one time we were playing a Monday night game, and Howard Cosell and Meredith came down to the locker room. And
mm-hmm.
Bud always had one of his senior players as a guard at the door. So they knocked, and they went and got Bud. But he put his hand over the doorway, and Bud has a way of making you uncomfortable. Like, what are you doing here without saying a word?
Yes, he does.
And he said, Bud said, what do you want? And he said, well, we came down and wish you good luck. Bud closed the door and said, you did. And that was it.
He was not one to use any extra words in a sentence or a thought process. And yet his style, his motivation, his loyalty, especially to one Jim Marshall, was remarkable. And I think back to those days, as you do, very fondly. Different breed of player, players that would be with this organization for years. You knew who would line up every year before free agency. And it created a family-type atmosphere that, Fred, I know you really appreciated.
Definitely. And Bud always gave those senior guys a year longer than what they were going to play, like Roy Winston and Brownie and Marshall. He would keep them an extra year
mm-hmm.
so that they'd know, now you better get ready. And he could tolerate things, but Bud always knew that he had the Trump ace in his back pocket.
Yeah.
And he pretty much controlled things. People see him now. The Bud Grant you see now is not the Bud Grant that was coaching.
No. No, he was in control of everything, and I don't think he ever said anything that he regretted. I mean, you watch the ESPN sound bites today from coaches, whether it be a Rex Ryan or anyone in the league who foot in mouth. I can't recall one moment where Bud said something that would have made headlines in sort of a tabloid fashion today, other than the fact that he criticized the officials, that he wanted full-time officials all the time.
Oh, yeah.
He was harping on that all the time.
Well, up there in the press box, we get to see a lot of those senior officials
come. Right.
The observers, they hated Bud. But Bud hated them, too. And he had a knack for things. He's a guy that grew up during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
At an early age, he was a great athlete, and he accomplished a lot. But there's a lot of stories out there that are really classic about Bud.
Yeah, you know them all. We're talking to Fred Zambrilletti, also a member, of course, of the Vikings Ring of Honor. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about some of his other fond memories of the Minnesota Vikings, and also talk about this year's squad as well. We're talking to Fred Zambrilletti here on Vikings Purple Past on The Fan. Stay with us. And welcome back to Vikings Purple Pass. Mark Rosen, your host, talking to Fred Zambrilletti, who's a streak of 1,049 straight games in attendance ended Saturday in Landover, Maryland. Fred, of course, a longtime trainer with the Minnesota Vikings, as I mentioned before the commercial break, and the team's Ring of Honor. Let's just start with that. That had to be a great moment for you, Fred, to be surrounded by so many. And we just talked about the loyalty and the number of friends and teammates that were part of your organization. What was that day like for you?
Very touching. You take Curtis Rout, had a stroke,
mm-hmm.
in a wheelchair. He rode a bus from down in Tennessee to come up there for that day. And that's, to me, every time I see him, I just choke up.
Yeah.
And one of the things about Curtis is that he really gained the respect every day when he really kicked the dog out of Millard in the practice field. Millard was such a hard guy to deal with, and everybody would like to, but nobody could. But Curtis really worked him over that day.
Yeah.
And that, so Curtis became a hero.
Yeah, Curtis Boo Boo Rouse, for Viking fans who remember him fondly. Again, as you mentioned, he had some health issues, and that's an amazing story, and tells, I think, speaks volumes, Fred, of the loyalty and the appreciation that players had for you, and beyond mending them, being sort of their counsel as well. I'm sure you had a lot of that going on, that they felt maybe a trust and a bond with you that went beyond, hey, getting my knee fixed or my shoulder fixed, getting ready for a football game.
Well, it was great, and so many of them I've got stories about that nobody even knows about, that I know what they did on that practice field,
Yeah. How
much they contributed. And it's just like, to me, I got a lot of attention on this field here. And it seems like those who need it the least don't get it. I mean, it doesn't work that way. And a lot of people that contributed a lot to this Viking franchise.
Well, I know it. You bleed purple like no other. Let's, if we can for a moment, just fast forward. And as a former longtime trainer, and a lot of Viking fans are obviously very concerned about Adrian Peterson, the torn ACL, MCL. He's going to have surgery here, I'm sure, within a week or so. It's a procedure that has worked. We got Terry Allen recovered from it, a former Viking running back. You know what Adrian Peterson's all about, Fred. Kind of just a general thought about Adrian and his ability to come back and be the player that he has been in the National Football League.
Well, it was very unfortunate. And because this year I thought he really played hard. He wanted to show everybody that he deserved that contract. And he is a tremendous individual. And a little story about him that I was told, that he was in the locker room while the team was out on the field the second half. And he was really despondent. But he told Jeff Anderson, he said, I want you to go out on that field and find this boy, told him where the seat was, and he's got my jersey on. Bring him in here. I want to autograph that jersey for him. Now, that's class.
Mm.
You know? And people were in the day-to-day, you know, a lot of them were kind of aloof, wanted to be treated special. But Adrian is a special person, and I think that I know he will work hard. He'll be out there to prove that he can do it. And let's hope by the grace of God that everything, no complications, and everything goes well, and he'll get back, you know. When you come back, you're not quite at the form you were before, but over time, that can come.
Yeah.
That can come.
Well, it has been. It's, you know, the procedure has certainly improved. I mean, an injury is an injury, and this one's a serious one. But, you know, there have been guys who come back from it, and Adrian runs violently. It's that type of a game, and you've seen more than your share of very serious injuries. It seems like everyone's talking about the concussions now in the NFL, much more so than certainly in your time as a trainer with the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, is there anything the game can do? Or is it just that's the nature of it, and this is why people sign up to play it?
Well, I don't know if this will work, but I've felt for some time, for years, that if you took the face mask off the helmet, that these guys wouldn't be using their head like mm-hmm. they are now. If they break their nose and lose a few teeth, they're going to practice a little different technique than coming in with that helmet and cracking heads with each other. And that's the only thing I can count. You know, you got to give here, get a little there, but it's a serious problem. Nobody wants to see these people to have permanent trauma in their head, and yet the helmets are far better than what they were in our day.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the helmets that Mick Tindelhoff wore and everything, and you know, they were old army suspension type helmets. But the guys weren't as big, and I don't think the collisions were quite as violent. There were a lot of dirty play in the old days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, guys would go in. I mean, the head slap that was allowed for defensive linemen. I mean, the way that quarterbacks were mistreated. I mean, they were, you know, today, yeah, they'd be a flag every single time.
And the crackback block.
Right.
And the clothesline by the middle linebacker receiver coming down there. You know, there's a lot of things they've improved on. And you know, they've really watched the kickoffs and the punts real closely for blocking in the back. It's a better game, but it's a faster game now, too.
Yeah. You've been around so many people for so many years, Fred, and there's all this stadium talk. It still is not resolved yet, but do you see this getting settled one way or another?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. I think that, you know, you'd be surprised the number of people who watch that game on Sundays and are Viking fans. And I've got elderly ladies that in church they never saw a football game in their life, but watch the Vikings on Sunday. And I think it'll get worked out. I have my favorites. I think that it was a tremendous mistake to build a stadium on campus. To me, I thought that the university should have used those resources to come up with something like in bioscience for the building, and then do like that. You go to the University of Iowa.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many new buildings going around that place, and they're getting so much grants for the research that they're doing. And I think the university has lost a step with that. I think every president that comes in has the intention to build that image, but they haven't been very successful. They've been successful in their transplant program, thanks to Nigeria, but in their heart program,
mm-hmm.
it's got a little high, but they haven't. There's more that they can do to make themselves be known more than just a football team or a new stadium.
Right.
Land over there. I wrote Sid a letter 10 years ago, a long, long letter of all the reasons that the Gophers and the Vikings go to the fairgrounds. And Sid, after a while, he agreed that's where it should be. Well, it's too late now. We've torn down enough stadiums and
yeah.
stuff, you know.
Well, we all know the politics involved with so many of these issues, and this would take another hour to delve into all those. We have 2 or 3 minutes left here in this program, Fred, and I know there are so many individuals. I could throw names out to you, and especially the old guard like Bill Brown and Dave Osborne and the late, great Carl Kosulke, who was a favorite of mine, and But are today's ball players, do they have, is the money almost taking away from the love of the game, or do you still see guys in this football team that, you mentioned Adrian Peterson, maybe a Jared Allen, they're more old school that have that appreciation for the past and the people who paved the way for these guys to make the kind of livings they're making today?
Well, I can tell you a story. You know, Robert Smith and I were pretty close. I said to Robert, I said, if you were making the money that those guys made, you wouldn't be playing today. And he said, you got that right. So that sums it up pretty good.
Yeah, it does.
But there's so much money in it, and those guys didn't make any money. They all had jobs in the off season, and I thought with their jobs and being here in the community really built a strong Viking loyalty because they met so many people in the community. There was nothing like game day at the Met.
Oh.
Walking through there and people tailgating, going out there afterwards, mixing with them. Special. Special. But now, you got to have guards when these guys leave the...
I know, isn't that something? I know, it's sad.
To keep away from them, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the players used to tailgate with... They walk to their cars and they'd hang out with the fans at Met Stadium and tailgate with them, have a hot dog, a brat, whatever, and then go to their cars and go home.
Yeah, and you'd see, like, a training camp. They got guards around them, and so they only get autographs certain days and stuff.
It's a world we live in, Fred, unfortunately, isn't it? That's for sports and everything else that we have to deal with right now. But I just wanted to thank you so much, Fred, for spending some time with us this evening. I know fans were concerned, and also it was great to see the recognition you got on the telecast as well, that people were really talking about that they missed you Saturday afternoon. And we hope to see you, of course, if not this Sunday, down the road. We know we will.
At
future Viking games, and stay well, my friend. Stay well, and on behalf of all Viking fans, thanks for all you've done for this franchise.
Well, thank you.
And it's good to talk to you. We're talking Fred Zamberletti, the longtime trainer of the Minnesota Vikings, team historian, consultant, 1961 to this day. Man, he has seen it all. And we wish Fred the very, very best down the road as well. We want to thank you for your loyalty to this program throughout this season. We've had a blast talking to some of the greatest Vikings of all time, and we finished it off tonight with Fred Zamberletti. Thank you for listening on Vikings Purple Pass. This is Mark Rosen here on The Fan.